right, welcome to Talking Taker, episode number 20. Is that right, number 20?
I got that right?
All right, perfect. Right. It's a new decade. Sure. Anyway, this is our encyclopedic exploration, digging up the career of the greatest professional wrestling character of all time. And we want to thank you for joining us for this edition of Dead Man Talking. My name is Alex Dorio. I am one of your co-hosts and creatures of the night. And I'm joined, as always, by my tag team partner, Travis White. I was going to say Happy New Year to you, but that will be next week's episode. But it is a new year. We're kicking off 1996, so a brand new round on the podcast. But welcome, Travis. I hope you had a good Christmas.
I did, man. I had a great Christmas. It was good to see you for a little bit there. And, yeah, good to spend time with family. I hope all our listeners had a good Christmas, good Hanukkah, happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, whatever. Happy Festivus, all those things.
Yes.
The weather's got me a little under the weather, actually. So I apologize for our listeners if I'm a little different. This episode is sponsored by Benadryl and Flonase for me. Not literally.
Well, I hope I didn't.
One of the sponsors.
I hope I didn't pass it on to you because I had the flu this past weekend, and you know, we had plans to record a live episode, and I just mean us in person, no audience or anything, but we were supposed to do this episode together in Augusta. We were both home for Christmas, but I just couldn't bring myself up to do it and be face-to-face breathing on you for an hour talking about this match. So, unfortunately.
Well, as fun as that would have been, I really appreciate that, though. But hey, man, you kicked out at two, and you're back on your feet.
That's right, that's right. And you gave me some awesome wrestling Christmas presents. You got me a brand new Undertaker glass I'll be drinking out of as we record this episode and future episodes. You got me a Bruce Pritchard doot-doot-doot fanny pack and Malibu Al's used car shop trucker hat from Southpaw Regional Wrestling. Man,
yes.
Best Christmas presents
box,
I got.
Box of goodies.
Yes,
box of goodies.
Incredible.
And I got a new microphone to record this with, so hopefully... Unfortunately, we're not using it this time because the holidays have been busy. But hopefully next time, listeners, our sound quality will improve a little bit because I have a new microphone to podcast with courtesy of Alex Dorio. So thanks.
We're trying. We're trying to up our game a little bit. Episode number 20, as we kick off a new era, we're doing what we can. If you want to throw any sponsorship money our way, you know, we'll take that as well as we try to up our game. You know, we're not going to say no to it. We're working on a few other things to bring the game up, so we appreciate you joining us and continuing on with this journey as we unravel the new era of the Undertaker's career. That kind of takes us to a perfect way to segue into kicking off this episode, Travis. I wanted to talk as we enter into 1996 on the podcast, just a little bit about the state of the World Wrestling Federation right now as we continue on this journey through the Undertaker's career. We've talked about, we're not just talking about one man's career, we also want to broaden that to talking about the wrestling industry in general. And you know, I was preparing for this episode, watching some of the Raws leading up to it, I really began to see like that we're entering into sort of a transitional period, because this is technically, I guess, still the new generation era of the WWF. We're still in the tail end of that. And you can see that, like, on the, I think it's the first Raw of the new year, the January 2nd Raw. You've got one of the just cheesiest, goofiest episodes of Raw of all time with the Raw Bowl, this one-time-only match, which I thought was so cool as a kid. And, you know, it's still funny to go back and look at. Everyone's wearing football jerseys. You get different timeouts in the match, and Earl Hebner's the referee throwing flags in the match. You know, it's goofy as all get out. You've got characters like on the Raw right before the Royal Rumble. You've got Undertaker in the main event against freaking Isaac Yankum yet again, one-on-one. We talked about him a good bit on our last episode. So that's, of course, our first ever one-on-one matchup between Undertaker and Kane in his earlier days. So it's neat to see, but it's just funny and such a goofy character. And there's a lot more goofy characters that we're still going to see yet to debut in 1996. But it's also, we're seeing the first early glimpses of the Attitude Era really creeping in as well, because on that same episode, January 15th, I mean, we get a lot of looks at Goldust, and he is in his most gold dustiest, you know, iteration ever. He is turning on the sexual, homosexual overtones, even though Vince McMahon says on commentary, Goldust does not represent the views of the homosexual community. He's very clear to point that out. We've got that creeping in. We've got the very beginning of that episode has Sunny in lingerie, like saying, viewer discretion is advised for Monday Night Raw. Say what?
That was strange.
That was really strange. And then, you know, it's just funny to see that blend. And Undertaker's still got his mask on. He's still got the purple gloves. I just felt like, and you can talk about this, just a little bit of the blending of the two eras. One is kind of being phased out, and one is kind of being phased in as we start 1996.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very strange because also on January 8th episode, there's an in-ring debut of Steve Austin as the ringmaster. So he debuts here in January. Again, Goldust has debuted, I think, in August or September of 95. But he's, like you said, he's really turned on the sex appeal here to Razor Ramon and everything. I mean, he's turned up to 11. And also, when Steve Austin debuts in the ring on January 15th, he debuts against a young Matthew Hardy.
Wasn't that something?
Asleep Matt Hardy. Not woken yet. So, sleepy Matt Hardy. And then there's also these atrocious Vader promos.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I love Vader. And I remember, you know, I remember in episode one talking about Sting was my guy. Sting was the guy that brought me into wrestling. I saw the face paint. And one thing I remember even as a young kid is watching him versus Vader. You know, just flipping through channels and stuff, and just watching him and Vader and Flair and stuff. And then that was WCW. So this is a few years later, but these promos do not, like, looking at him now, it's like, this guy looks like a buffoon. He's just like in this spandex outfit with a mask on that has no explanation, like working out in his gym, like out in the Colorado Rockies, just screaming from a mountaintop. It has nothing to do to build up, like, the scariness of Vader, but
no, they're very '90s, and they don't age very well.
No, not at all. And but it is just atrocious promos. But yeah, you got all this new talent debuting, you know, around the end of '95 and beginning of '96, and it's just really weird because even as we're headed in this match, we're going to talk about is Bret versus Taker, but then we're headed toward, you know, Taker and Diesel. And it's weird because Diesel is the face of the new generation, but he's actually older than Undertaker. So
that's a good point.
I've always found that funny. Because Nash, I think, is like 58 years old currently. I think he's 4 or 5 years older than Undertaker. So that's weird. But
and he's definitely, like we've talked about this on the past couple episodes too, he's doing that a tweener character, which we haven't really seen before, because he's still, you know, best friends with Shawn Michaels, who's the biggest babyface right now, but he's doing a lot of heelish stuff, and he's being a real jerk to The Undertaker, and we see a whole lot more of that in the match, too.
Oh, yeah. And he's less Diesel and more Kevin Nash, I'd say. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
He's way less Diesel. Like, if you look back at Diesel 93, 94, that's not the same guy we have here. This is more of a, I mean, this is 5 months before he goes to WCW. You know, and he's almost the same guy when he hops to WCW as he is here. You know, he's definitely more of a Kevin Nash than a Diesel. But anyway, also, I did want to mention this, that there's really no interaction after Survivor Series, between Survivor Series and Royal Rumble here. We really don't have any interaction between Taker and Bret. They're both baby faces here heading into this match. Now, the Raw after Survivor Series, the main event is Razor Ramon versus Yokozuna, and Undertaker brings a casket out to the ring, and Yokozuna runs away, and that's it. There's no follow up from that. It's not leading to a Yokozuna program, not leading to a Razor program, nothing. It's very strange. But he brings that casket out, and then that's it. Yokozuna runs away, and so there's just promos back and forth between Bret and Shawn, really. I mean, did you find any, like, interaction between them or physicality?
I don't think they had any sort of in-ring stuff that I could find. Yeah. Definitely not on the Raws. And, you know, the syndicated stuff's hard to find now, like Superstars and right. Action Zone, and you can only find so much of it on YouTube and Daily Motion. And like I've posted a couple promos on our Twitter page at Talking Taker and on the sure. Facebook Talking Taker, but yeah, there's not a ton. Even though, like you said, this feud has actually been building for a long time, and yeah. even before Survivor Series, like the promos Undertaker's cutting for his return at Survivor Series, he's mentioning the WWF Championship in those promos and right. how he wants whoever wins between Diesel and Bret Hart. So he's been mentioning that, and he's been making those discount double check gestures, motioning for the championship, and the commentators are bringing it up that, yeah, he's got to be in the running for a title shot soon, and the creatures of the night have been wondering when he'll finally get his title shot. So it's been right. building up, even though we don't see a lot of it happening with the typical way we see feuds building up nowadays with in-ring promos or tag team matches or all this other stuff. So yeah, not a huge build-up, and it's kind of a strange match. You know, we haven't seen yeah. a lot of these two babyface matchups, and it kind of came out of nowhere, but I guess there's not
more of an angle.
Just say what?
It's more of an angle to build to WrestleMania than
exactly.
it is
yeah.
a story about M2, you know?
Yeah. And I think, too, it's because there's just not any major heels right now for Bret Hart to face. I mean, besides Diesel, who is, you know, Bret Hart's already faced him, and he's going to face him at the February pay-per-view. I mean,
again,
Mabel's been squashed. Yokozuna's done for. You've got Jeff Jarrett. You've got Goldust. But, you know, none of those guys are really going to main event the Royal Rumble. So, I mean, Undertaker's as good a choice as anybody.
Yeah, I guess, because it seems like January, the Royal Rumble pay-per-view always has a weird title match anyway. Like,
yeah.
It just seems to always have a strange one, because they know the Rumble's going to sell the show itself, you know? They always seem to put, like, something strange on as the title match. I guess that's what the philosophy was here. I don't know.
Yeah.
But if we mention Goldust, he's being built up here, and it's going to come into play later on. Again, listeners, get ready. We're going to have lots of Goldust this year. And Mankind promos, or I don't know if they start... They may start after this match. I can't remember. Maybe in February, but I do remember Mankind promos are going to start popping up here on Monday Night Raw. So
yeah,
that will come into play later on this year as well. So
those are our two major topics for the next few episodes for sure. After we finish episodes. Up with Diesel next month, yeah, and yeah, those new blood are coming in. And just before we get to the match, just real quick about the Rumble itself. I watched it. Before this match, and it really kind of adds to what we were just talking about. It feels right. like the end of an era in a lot of ways in this Royal Rumble, because it's really the last appearances for a long time for Mabel and Kama, two of Undertaker's biggest rivals of last year and two kind of mainstays of the past couple of years in the WWF. And then you've got Bob Backlund in one of his last matches, Tatanka, Crush... Yeah. And then you've got just some random guys like Dory Funk, of all people. Who'd you say?
Barry Horowitz,
Doug Gilbert yeah. from the USWA, Japanese guy called Omari, the Samoan squat team, who I think that's the only appearance they ever had in the WWF. It's just like a weird transitional Royal Rumble. A lot of just, as Vince McMahon said, whole lot of beef in there. Just like unnecessarily, I would say.
A lot of steak, not a lot of sizzle.
Ooh, that's so, that's perfect.
Not a whole lot of beef. Yeah, that's exactly.
But I will say that it was cool to see Triple H. He came in at number one and almost went almost an hour in there. So it's still really early, just, you know, less than a year into his time in the WWF. But clearly a guy they were watching out for and wanting to get a lot out of, because they had a lot of confidence to put him in there for almost an hour to kind of carry the match in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah, he was an Iron Man. Well, and he gets a good push until the curtain call.
Right. MSG. Exactly.
Then we'll see what happens at WrestleMania. But as you mentioned, the Royal Rumble goes on before the championship match, which, yes, again, it's kind of rare. It's happened before, I think, but
I think this was the first time it had happened up to this point.
Well, I remember I was watching it, and I was like, man, why is, you know, I don't remember why it was doing that, but again, it's because it's all building to the main event, to the angle. It's all part of an angle,
yes,
basically.
Yes.
So it's not, you know, it's normally the Royal Rumble goes on last, and that's your big finale, who's winning, but this definitely needed to go on. The championship match needed to go on after this Rumble to tell this, to tell the proper story. So
exactly.
Good job. Good job on them, the storytelling.
Yeah. This is also the first appearance of a new Royal Rumble logo, so that was kind of interesting as the generations continue to evolve.
Yeah.
And we've also got... did you watch the opening video for the pay-per-view?
I can't remember. What was it?
Oh, it was just one of those great... like 90s WWF videos, just got a voiceover. It's kind of the feuds in there.
In the World Wrestling Federation, the reigning champion is defined by Hart. Bret the Hitman Hart, a living legend who has conquered adversity. A man who continues to overcome seemingly insurmountable odds. But tonight, the Hitman must face the challenge of a man who is no mere mortal. A force whose powers are mythical. A phenom whose heart at times can be cold.
Just really well done. I always hold a special place in my heart for those kind of 96, 97 opening videos. Black and white, voiceover. It was cool. Well done.
Oh, yeah. It's so good. So good. All this stuff was fun. It's fun to go back and watch all these things.
Yeah. So we've got Mr. McMahon, Mr. McMahon and Mr. Perfect on commentary, if you will.
Mr.
Yeah. So again, another new commentary combination for us.
Yeah. Not my favorite.
No, but...
I love Mr. Perfect, but he's just not, I don't know, he's not perfect in commentary. He has some little things he says that are funny, but I don't know. I just miss the old stuff.
Yeah, he doesn't have the same... humor and charisma as Bobby Heenan and Jerry Lawler, but I did appreciate, I felt like he did a good job analyzing the match, just like actually as a wrestler, and he brought up a lot of interesting stuff about the psychology of the match, even though he wasn't particularly, you know, funny as a heel, like your typical heel commentator is. I thought he brought up some good stuff and didn't mind it.
Booker T could take a few pointers, maybe.
Oh, for sure. I can go back and watch this.
As we're watching all these old matches, I don't remember Jim Ross not being on commentary this much. You're like,
I guess so.
I look back at this era, I'm like, I thought I remember Jim Ross was the voice of this, and he wasn't. We've encountered him a few times here.
Yeah.
You know, but we'll get to that later as we get later this year, I think, and in 97. So
I guess maybe he was more on TV than on the pay-per-views. Yeah. But yeah, I definitely, yeah, in your head, I'm thinking more... he's on these pay-per-views, but yeah, I guess not.
Right.
Clearly not. Yeah. I will say that Vince McMahon did mention in the Royal Rumble at one point, he said there were some great double, triple, quadruple teams happening during this match. So I know you pointed that out on the last show about him saying something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, Vince loves his triple, double, quadruple, double split thing. Great.
Love it. So yeah, so let's talk about the match. And as you mentioned, the end of the Royal Rumble leads into the beginning of this match.
Shawn Michaels kicks Diesel in the face and eliminates him, knocking him over the rope. And then Diesel kind of is stewing outside, and he comes in, back in the ring, and kind of thinks they're going to face off. And then he puts his hand up in the air, and Shawn goes up and high-fives him. And anyway, don't talk about them. Diesel's on the outside of the ring still. I guess Sean has already gone in the back. I thought Diesel went away and then Shawn left later, but apparently Shawn left first. And then Undertaker's music hits pretty much immediately. There's no video package in between or anything. Again, which in this day and age, you'd be like, that's kind of rare. But again, it's telling a story here. So Undertaker's music hit. He gets a nice pop, but it's not as big as it has been before, in my opinion. And then he's coming down to the ring, and Diesel meets him face-to-face in the hallway and actually puts you there. And Taker drops his hat and his coat, and he just starts attacking Diesel, going at him, which, again, shows a new kind of aggression, a new side to his character that we'll see even later on after the match. But he just takes his hat and coat off, attacking Diesel, and they have to be broken up by the officials, even though Paul Bearer is holding the urn up. And I just wrote that I guess he got the remnants of the chain back and melted it down, and Vince McMahon's going to confirm that later on during the match.
So, yeah, I didn't, because on the Raw before this, he still has the necklace.
Yeah, exactly.
So at some point, I was like, that they put that on their to-do list before the Royal Rumble. Man, we got to get to the chain shop and melt this thing back down again.
Exactly. I would like to see a vignette of that.
I know.
We didn't get. But one thing, Diesel keeps repeating at Undertaker's face is, I ain't afraid of the dark. I ain't afraid of the dark.
I ain't afraid of the dark. And I think we just heard something in Diesel's.
I'm afraid of the dark.
Not afraid of the dark.
I ain't afraid of the dark.
No, I don't suggest that he would be.
So, you know, we get a little more Kevin Nash-ish than normal.
Yes,
so,
yes. He's taunting him, teasing him. And this was cool, man. I really liked this build-up. It was different. And, you know, the Undertaker's entrance, we've talked so much about it. It's like, it's kind of this sacred thing, and for Diesel to interrupt it was a big deal, and the crowd was shocked. I think they were quiet, and then, like, Undertaker had to finish his entrance with no music. The lights were up. It was weird to see him walk to the ring without any music, and then, like, take his disrobe or whatever, and it was... it made you feel like this was a big deal, that this was something different, that they were shaking things up a bit, and something big was going down between Undertaker and Diesel.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I wrote pretty much all that down, too. And, it was just definitely different. And again, it gave a little bit different taste and a little bit different character for Undertaker, because he just starts wailing away at Diesel, you know. But then Bret Hart's music hits, and he gets a great ovation, in my opinion. He was definitely, like, over as a babyface here.
But that would not last.
No, it would not last. But he kisses the title goodbye, I guess, and goes outside and gives a kid with Down syndrome some glasses, which is such a great babyface move. In fact, I believe this past week on Raw, John Cena did the same type thing. So
learning from the best.
Yeah, he did. But Bret Hart, man, I was like, what a babyface move, man. It's awesome, so...
Yeah, and, you know, these are just two legends. Commentary brings up this is Bret Hart's 43rd pay-per-view appearance, and I guess by my count, you know, this is our 20th episode, but I think this would be Undertaker's 23rd pay-per-view appearance, because we skipped some of the Royal Rumbles that he was in, so I think that's right. Somewhere close.
Yeah, but...
And then one of the announcers says, you know, this is the sharpshooter against the tombstone. And that's a great way to put it. Just two iconic finishing moves. Two of the all-time, probably top 10, maybe even top 5 WWE finishing moves of all time going against each other. So we're in for a very different sort of match. You know, this is, I think you said earlier, this is the longest match we've covered on here for sure. And it's... sort of a coming out party, I guess, for The Undertaker as far as working like a real big-time main event style match.
Yeah, it's not his first main event, but definitely his first main event style match, you know? Mm-hmm. So this match is, I think, 28 and a half minutes, give or take a few seconds there. But so it's long, a long Undertaker match for sure. It's not a, you know, it's not a Survivor Series match or something.
Yeah, it's his first time getting a chance to like hang with somebody who's not a giant or is not just a monster of some sort. So, yeah, big opportunity for Undertaker. And
no, that said, he's still the Undertaker. He, you know, they start off, he's you know, trying to close on Bret, and Bret's ducking it and feeling him out. And it kind of gives it like almost a shoot feel at the beginning. Like they're kind of like really trying to feel each other out and they don't go for that, you know, collar and elbow tie up at the beginning or anything, and it feels more real.
It's definitely a methodical pace between the two. Yeah. It's not a sprint at all, by any means.
Yeah, and Taker gets punched in the face, and he no-sells it, and he's on offense, and he gets a four count as he's choking the he's choking Brett, and the referee, you know, counts him off at four. And I just wrote that he stalks the referee after that, which is, again, he's still a babyface, but it's just a great touch. He hasn't lost that since match one we've been reviewing. He's still, even though this can be a good guy, he still doesn't hesitate to get in that referee's face and scare him off, you know? The refs always sell they're scared of him, you know, which I love.
Yeah, and Undertaker, he's doing that, and he's sort of reverting back even further to his original, to that first year he had as a heel. He's kind of playing the heel role in this match to begin with, because he does that smothering thing over Bret Hart and is choking him out. And we even see Paul Bearer get in on the act, and Bret Hart puts his feet on the ropes in a pin attempt, and Paul Bearer just knocks his feet off the ropes in front of the referee. So somebody's got to play the heel here, and Undertaker is reverting back to that. You know, we get the sense that the most important thing is the WWF Championship here, and Paul Bearer and Undertaker, even though they're fan favorites now, they're going to do whatever it takes to get the WWF title back.
Oh, yeah. I made that same observation because, you know, he doesn't hesitate to go back to his heel ways even though he's still a babyface, and, you know, that switches a little bit later on, too. The crowd kind of gets to pick and choose, you know, who the heel and who the face is here, which is, again, really cool that they have the crowd in the palm of their hands.
Oh, they do.
And they're working the crowd like they're supposed to, rather than the crowd working them like happens nowadays. So, and he goes for old school after that, and he gets a claw hold again. And I wrote right here, though, the crowd kind of goes really quiet.
Yeah.
They don't really know what to do, who to cheer for, you know. And it's not like they have go away and eat like, you know, some baby faces do. But there's a couple hope spots, and the crowd pops, and again, Taker gets close on over the top rope. Does he land on his feet? Absolutely. Always sticks landing, man. There should be a guy in the front row that holds up a 10.
Every time.
Like, he always sticks a landing. Yeah. So, and then they brawl on the outside for a little bit, and Taker plays a heel role. He starts hitting Brett's back on the ring post.
Oh, yeah. Bret Hart does a dive to the outside. Taker catches him and plants him into the post. And then I wrote at this point, McMahon says, "Oh, that's it. It's over." Like, he's like a football fan who gives up in like the second quarter. You know, it's just like someone scores a touchdown and he's that fan that's just like, "Oh, whatever. It's over. Turn the game off." Yeah. That's what Vince McMahon was like at this point. We're 5 minutes into the match. Oh, there's no way Bret Hart can recover from that. And Vince McMahon also, at this point, is calling The Undertaker's mask a facial appliance.
The Undertaker wearing that facial appliance. Everyone will remember that The Undertaker's face was crushed by Yokozuna and by Mabel. You got a suit that looks like underneath that mask.
Yes, he is. I look at that dude. He's saying facial appliance.
Yeah, he said that many times.
That's his word of the week, man.
Yeah.
A facial appliance. It's not an adhesion, it's not an apparatus, it's an appliance.
It's an appliance at this point.
Worth the month.
At this point, I don't know how they're not getting counted out. I mean, they're outside the ring for like 5 minutes.
For 2.5 minutes, yeah. Nowadays they would say, "Oh, the refs being a little lenient here. It's a title match," but they didn't even say anything here. The ref was just not paying attention, I guess. So, but I do want to say this, too. Commentary keeps talking about Brett and how he's going to have to approach this match the same way he did with Diesel, you know, chop the big man down. I just thought that was kind of cool continuity because they are both big guys that he's going. And then Undertaker takes a Mick Foley bump on the outside. He gets slammed into the ring steps. I mean, he flies over those ring steps like Mick Foley style. And this is before Mick's even in WWF. So
Taker was bumping and selling, and he was selling the legs too, and it made sense. It's the great psychology, Bret Hart. You know, the smaller guy, you know, he's trying to chop down the Undertaker, take the legs out from under him, and does, you know, the commentary picks up on that. And Bret Hart gets him in the ring, pulls out a figure four before he even tries the sharpshooter. So that was cool. I liked that. And commentary saying, you know, I can't imagine Undertaker would ever submit. And I don't think he ever has, definitely not up to this point. So that was cool. They're building it up.
Right before this, Mr. Perfect goes, you know what the time limit is for this match? And like, I think Vince is just caught off guard because, like, you know, it depends on the day when they're going to enforce time limits. But Vince is like, I don't think we have one. We're just going to stay with it until it ends all night. We'll be here all night. I was just like, you could tell he was like caught off guard. Like, dang it, Kurt. Like, why'd you ask me that?
Don't ask that.
Have an answer. But yeah, you know, this is a classic. It's not a 5-star classic match, you know, in my opinion, or yours probably either. But it's a good storytelling match when it comes to that, you know, David versus Goliath, you know. You got to pick a body part, chop the big man down, work the leg, because Bret's working the legs the whole time. And Undertaker, he's selling like a champion, sure. Man. Like, it's, you know, to somebody who's too young and maybe listening to this and doesn't remember this match, it's kind of like Brock Lesnar and AJ Styles was, you know. Brock Lesnar was selling for AJ Styles, you know, most recently.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing here. Undertaker... obviously respects Bret Hart because he's selling like a beast for him, man. We've rarely seen Undertaker this vulnerable, you know, when he's just being worked on, when it has nothing to do with the urn, you know, and his power, just in a match, you know?
Yeah, I said it felt kind of like, we've kind of compared Undertaker matches to monster movies before, but again, this felt like that he's a monster who's been wounded, but not killed, and so he's kind of stalking Bret Hart. He never stops moving towards Bret Hart, but he does have a limp, and he's struggling, but he's still going in for the kill. He never stops trying to win the match, sort of like some sort of zombie who just keeps moving towards trying to eat the brains, doing whatever they can to survive. That's the Undertaker here in this match, fighting through things. He tries to reverse the figure four. He's even something that a lot of people don't do, even didn't do back then and definitely don't do now, he's fighting through the rest holds. Like, Bret Hart gets a chin lock or a sleeper hold locked on, and Undertaker's, like, fighting and moving and trying to get out of it and not just laying there.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's just so good to see that kind of stuff, you know? It just gets lost nowadays. And also, I just want to say congratulations and happy birthday to George Burns. Because Vince McMahon, did you catch that? He's like, happy birthday to George Burns.
Why?
I don't know. He says, congratulations and happy birthday to George Burns. Great. I don't know why or what it had to do with anything, but I just want to go ahead and drop that line here, too.
What a perfect Vince thing to do.
Yeah. And Vince McMahon questions, he's kind of, you know, painting Undertaker as a heel right here. He says, you know, does he really need that facial appliance? Or is he just using it as intimidation?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you got the crowd popping for him when he's getting out of figure four and cheering for Undertaker and got rest in peace chants going. And then on the other hand, you got Bret Hart going heel mode. He starts trying to grab the appliance. Now I'm saying appliance. Grab the facial adhesion off of Undertaker's face, you know, kind of playing that dirty heel tactic. So, yeah, they're both going back and forth with, you know, who's the babyface and who's the heel here.
They are, yeah. And Bret Hart starts getting booed, and I think Vince and Perfect are caught off guard by that. They're surprised to hear that and don't really know how to react. Vince was definitely not expecting it.
Okay, George Burns, then.
that's what's go-to.
That might have been where it was.
But Undertaker's still, like you say, he's still cheating a little bit. He tries to use a chair, and Paul Bearer distracts the referee while he's doing it. So, yeah, it's just a lot of interesting dynamics going on here.
He chokes him with the camera cord outside,
too. Yeah, he does that, too.
It's the camera cord and chokes him, which, again, it shows that desperation and how this title means something to him, you know?
Exactly.
He's willing to go to any lengths, you know, to get it back. It's been a long time since he's had it.
Yes, so, almost
5 years.
5 years, so, exactly.
Well, 4.5, yes.
Bret Hart gets a near fall at one point and slips out of the tombstone and starts moving into his five moves of doom as we kind of getting closer towards the end sequence. But after each one, Undertaker sits up. He sits up after the leg sweep, sits up after the bulldog, and then he does the backbreaker, but he can't quite get up after that one. So after the third one, he's finally wearing the Undertaker down and is able to finally, he tries to lock in the sharpshooter, but Undertaker gets
he gives a thumbs down first. He does it like, he puts his thumbs up and he puts like a thumbs down.
Like Batista.
Pre-Batista. Yeah. Must be where Batista got it from. But yeah, I've never seen Bret Hart do that. He does the thumbs down and he puts the sharpshooter on.
Yeah, I don't remember him doing that.
Okay, Tim's the sharpshooter. Excuse me.
Yeah, Tim's the sharpshooter. Taker gets the choke. And I really... I was expecting him to do the Hell's Gate, but he didn't have that in his arsenal yet. Would have been perfect
about 12 years later, he'd have had the Hell's Gate on him.
So. Yeah. And then...
running clothesline spot, middle, and they're both down. But strangely, Bret Hart gets up first. I thought Undertaker would have gotten up first, but Bret does. So...
And then he just blatantly goes and unties the turnbuckle. So
yeah.
We're seeing both the baby faces kind of resort to doing whatever it takes here.
Yeah, it was kind of a strange, you know, for such a white meat baby face Bret Hart was. He's just desperate to keep his title, you know. He goes over and blatantly takes the turnbuckle tab off. Not even trying to, like, you know, hide it or anything. So it was weird. And he goes for the facial mask and appliance. I'm trying not to say that, but now Vince has it in my head. I guess it does work. Dadgum it, Vince, man. But then Taker flips him over like a snapmare almost, but Bret holds on to the mask,
mm-hmm.
and it comes off. And it takes the crowd about 2 seconds to realize what just happened. And once they do, man, they pop pretty big.
Yeah.
So like, oh, my goodness, what's happening? So you guessed that this was like a, we got to get the mask off, take care, like that, you know, that storyline is over, let's move on, and this was just how they did it, or did, you know?
I think that's definitely part of, I don't think that was the impetus for the match, but sure. I think they were like,
right.
Yeah, it's time to get this thing off, it doesn't work, I know it was necessitated by an injury, but it just... It never looks right to me. I don't know if they thought maybe they wanted to do full time with the mask, but
right.
You know, it takes away from Undertaker. He has such incredible facial expressions, and the mask just takes away from that.
Well, here when he gets taken off, he is livid, man.
Yeah,
he's like gone Super Saiyan, like Dragon Ball Z style. He's angry.
Exactly,
angry.
And Bret Hart sends. Go ahead.
There you go.
You got it.
Bret hits his head to the corner, the exposed corner, twice, and the crowd is like, boom.
Oh, they hated it.
Yeah. And he tries a cross body then, which gets turned into the tombstone.
But again, it's kind of like a monster movie. Bret Hart has exposed the character's weakness, and he's using it against him, bashing his weakened face.
Yeah.
Into the turnbuckle, is doing, you know, finally got him down and able to do that. But yeah, Undertaker hits the tombstone out of nowhere, kind of locks it in, and we get one and two, and then Big Daddy Cool Diesel sticks his ugly little face in there yet again, and pulls the referee out, and we get a disqualification after 30 minutes in the main event.
Yeah, no.
Are you kidding me?
Exactly, yeah.
It made sense.
Like, you don't want to end on a DQ, but like, it made sense for the story, you know?
Yeah, it made sense, but I hated it. You know, after a really good match. You know, somebody on Twitter, I think it was Best Wrestling Podcast, who mentioned us a few weeks ago. They said they remember that match just being disappointing, and I think I remembered it being disappointing, but going back and watching it, I really enjoyed it, man. I thought it was...
Oh, yeah.
And maybe that's just after sitting through, comma, casket matches and Mabel matches and all this other crap we've sat through for 5 years.
It could be because we've only watched Undertaker matches. You know?
We're not watching
the rest of WWF.
My perspective might be skewed, but dang, I mean, sure. I liked this match a lot. It was just a lot of different psychology in there. It wasn't a 5-star match, but, you know...
No.
I'd say 3.5-4 stars, man, for me personally. I thought it was really, really good and told a great story, you know, aside from that ending, which it still told a good story. The ending played a big part of it, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and like I said, it was 28 minutes long, but to me it didn't feel any, there's some parts that dragged, but it didn't feel like it was 28 minutes. It felt like it was 20 to me when I was watching it, you know. It felt long, but not too long. But I know you mentioned... before we were recording, they felt like it was about 5 minutes too long. But
I would say, you know, for me, I felt like it could have ended probably 5 minutes sooner. But otherwise, you know, really good match.
Yeah. So while we're, you know, recapping this, let's just keep talking about how the show, you know, kind of ends here. You know, you got I just wrote that I was very surprised that the camera shows Diesel flicks off Undertaker. Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah,
he's up the railway. It's like blatantly just it's cocky and arrogant and just flicks him off. And I was surprised that the camera showed that. You know, because again, we mentioned we're getting this is not quite technically Attitude Era yet, but it's definitely the, you know, the groundwork's being laid here, you know?
Exactly. So, you know, circling back to the beginning of the episode, we're seeing that now, and maybe it's the influence of having the pressure of WCW up against them, having some competition for the very first time. They feel like they need to be edgy and try more things, but yeah, I mean, Diesel taunting the Undertaker gives him the middle finger up in the air, and I just was like, I had forgotten about that. I was just whoa. That was big time.
Because if you look at this, I mean, Diesel's kind of like a pre-Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know? I mean, yes. I'm not saying Stone Cold stole anything from him. He did not.
But, right.
You know, as far as kind of being a tweener and kind of, you know, having that attitude and flicking people off, obviously, you know? Stone Cold's definitely cooler and did better things. But, you know, I didn't remember it, you know, being as closely resembling who Stone Cold's going to become until I saw this. So, that's strange. But then Taker stalks him to the back, you know, and Vince does, he sells something really good on commentary here. He talks about how, you know, we're not sure if Brett would have been pinned since Diesel ruined it, you know, like Taker, no one kicks out of the tombstone. So, you know, we're not sure, like, Diesel could have, or you know, Diesel ruined that match, you know, and Undertaker could have been the new champion, you know, so
great
that
point.
Was pretty cool continuity. I'm glad he, you know, told that part of the story too.
That's a great point. And then on the end of the show, we get the Royal Rumble Plus, and we get a promo from The Undertaker saying it'll be a cold day in hell before Diesel ever wins the WWF Championship, which is fitting because Diesel is going to get the next shot at the WWF Championship at In Your House in February. In a steel cage match against Bret Hart that Gorilla Monsoon makes to make sure that there's no interference like there was in this match.
And that's cool. I just wrote, how on earth is Diesel the number one contender?
Yeah.
What did he do?
Well,
at what point should he have been number? He was the second to last in the. He was number 29 left over in the Royal Rumble, and he lost to Bret Hart at Survivor Series, right?
Yes, but I think he hasn't gotten his rematch from Survivor Series.
Oh, okay. I was like, Undertaker needs a rematch here because he just got screwed. But, yeah, I guess so. But again, it makes sense for a story, but I just feel like if this was a shoot, how in the world is he the number one contender? But you're probably right. I think I missed that he had a rematch.
I don't think he has had a rematch yet, but yeah, I mean, Undertaker deserves a rematch too. So nowadays, it would probably be a triple threat match, but... we're going to see, and we'll talk about the build-up, I think, on next week's episode. We're going to see why it was Diesel versus Bret Hart, and there's going to be a pretty significant storyline development for Undertaker's next match that happens in that match, even though there's a steel cage surrounding the ring.
Yeah.
So,
and I just want to mention one final little bow here on the package here. I just want to mention that you talked about how, you know, Undertaker gives that promo about it'll be a cold day in hell for Diesel ever wins a... where's the world title? He says, where's the world title of the World Wrestling Federation? Which I just thought was funny. That's very, like, Shakespearean of him. But anyway, I was saying the way he says it, like, he has a different edge to him.
Make the match, but I tell you one thing, Gorilla Monsoon, it'll be a cold day in hell before Diesel ever wears the world title of the World Wrestling Federation.
There's no pallbearer there. There's no urn. But he just barges in front of... I said Monsoon and Todd Pettengill, I think.
Yeah.
And just kind of in face about it. I mean, he's not talking slowly. He's not doing the, like, little growls. He's not rolling his eyes in the back. There's no gimmicky stuff. It's almost like, you know, this is the real guy, you know? I just thought that was kind of cool. He kind of, again, we're kind of going away from some of this cartoony stuff. There's still some there, but, you know, getting into more of a real attitude-ish era type, you know? So. I sort of added a new layer to his character, you know. This whole angle with Diesel and Bret has definitely added a new layer of authenticity, maybe, to Undertaker. He's more of a real human now than just a zombie. So
exactly, and that's what we're going to be talking about That's a great point. That's what we're going to be talking about over the next few episodes. We're going to cover it all the Attitude Era and everything leading up to it, all through 1996. That's our next, 7, 8, 9 episodes here? Something like that. We hope you'll join us for the ride. Watch the match for our next episode, WrestleMania 12, Undertaker versus Big Daddy Cool Diesel. And let us know what you thought about that match. Let us know what you think about this match. What you think about the podcast in general. All the above. All that good stuff, man. We love hearing from our fans, from the audience. I'm trying to pull up on my phone, scroll through the comments and stuff. Want to give a shout out to one of our followers who's been following us for a while now, Cavante Smalls, at Cavante Smalls on Twitter. He's likes and retweets our stuff all the time. He said for the last episode, looking forward to listening. You guys are like my inner Taker nerd buddies I never had in real life. So, man, that's a huge compliment, man. We appreciate that. I mean, that's all we want to be. So we appreciate that. We appreciate you listening and everybody out there who's listening.
Oh, yeah. You're killing me, Smalls. That's awesome. I love that. Great. I mean that in a good way. That's great, man. We love that comment. So
you can reach out to us at Talking Taker on Twitter, Talking Taker Facebook page. We got to build up that page. We're getting close. I want to hit 800 followers on Twitter by December 31st. That's the goal. So, we're getting close. So spread the word about us if you can this weekend. Hit us up on, all the listening services, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, Google, Podomatic, all the above, man. We love your feedback. We love to hear from you. Drop us a rating, subscribe, do whatever you can to reach out. I want to hit up a couple omissions from our last couple episodes we missed out on. You mentioned on one episode, we got the very first appearance of a young Rhino on one episode of Raw leading up to one of the last shows.
Yes.
What's his name?
Terry Richards in that particular match.
So that was cool. And we also missed out on noting the very first appearance of Jeff Hardy, who was, I don't know if it was his first appearance. I don't know. But him and Matt were both carrying Mabel to the ring on his throne on a couple episodes of Raw leading up to that. So,
God bless them.
Yeah.
I hope they did some DDP yoga afterwards.
I don't know if we cover Rhino at all, but I know we'll cover Jeff Hardy here. He's got a pretty significant match with The Undertaker. It's not on a pay-per-view, but I think we might have to throw it into a bonus episode. Yeah.
We'll take it to Rhino during the hardcore title stuff.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure.
2001.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or is he anyway. Is Undertaker in the Invasion match? Like that tag match?
Yeah.
I think Rhino's in that too, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. So we'll get there. A few years.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Anything else?
If you guys were there in Fresno this night, 1996. I forgot to even say the date. I think it was January 28th, 1996. If you were there, hit us up. If you cosplayed, let us know. If you have the mask, the facial appliance, let us know. Other than that, ladies and gentlemen, take her easy.
You're probably watching it with George Burns.
What did he say?
You know, Helen's older than George Burns.
Oh, stop.
When did he just turn 100?
George just turned 100, yes.
Congratulations and happy birthday to George Burns.
Not so sure George is watching us, though.
Why not?
Well, he might be.